Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Our scripture this morning comes from the Psalms. We'll be reading the Psalms all summer. And this is Psalm 30, which is a song of praise, but also a song of lament. We're hearing a lot of that, where people are sad for their life on some daily level. And in order to deal with that, they need to do some expressing of that, but then also a remembering of how God has been present for them. So here's Psalm 30, and you can read along on the screen. I will extol you, O Lord, for you have drawn me up and did not let my foes rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried to you for help, and you have healed me. O Lord, you brought up my soul from Sheol, restored me to the life from among those gone down to the pit. Sing praises to the Lord, O you, his faithful ones, and give thanks to God's holy name, for his anger is but for a moment, and favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may linger for the night, but joy comes with the morning. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. By your favor, O Lord, you had established me as a strong mountain, and you hid your face, and I was dismayed. To you, O Lord, I cried, and to the Lord I made supplication. What profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it tell you of your faithfulness? So hear me, O Lord, and be gracious to me. Be my helper. You have turned my mourning into dancing. This is the remembering part. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy so that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever.
O woman and man, a place at the table. Revising the roles, deciding the share. With wisdom and grace, dividing the power. For woman and man, a system that's fair. And God will delight when we are creators of justice and joy. And joy.
First off, what I want to say is thank you for being good sports in advance, because knitting is not always the most, it's not really always what people seek to know about. I'll just say it that way. So I appreciate the fact that you knew it was knitting, maybe, and you came anyway. Or you walked in and you saw the knitting, yes, and it was actually knit on those actual tree stakes by one actual person who's on vacation. She's very strong. Very strong. And I appreciate those of you who are staying who want to know the score at Wimbledon right now, because I know there's all those things out in the world. So thank you very much for thinking that maybe, just maybe, we can learn a little bit about God and our faith through, here I go, just doing this. Look at that. That's knitting. This is knitting, and you can see it behind me. And it's really basic, One stick holds the loops of yarn. See that? That's the stick on the left, on your left, is holding the yarn. And the other stick, the stick on your right, is going through it, pulling the yarn that you see hanging down there, pulling that through the loop and popping the loop off. That's it. That's it. That's knitting. There we go. You just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, doing that until you have a piece of fabric. Here's one, a very long one. This one has intentional places where you might freak out if you're a new knitter. See those straight lines? That's where you dropped a stitch. So this shows you how knitting can look here. And if you dropped a stitch, but these are obviously beautifully done in pattern by me. But if you drop a stitch, like in your nylon stockings, if anyone still wears those, right? You don't like that because it runs all the way down. Why? Because it's one piece of thread, one, knitted back and forth and back and forth. Just one piece of thread. That's knitting. Now, I'm going to shift us. Here's the whole idea of grace. It's unmerited, it's unearned, it's unexpected, and it's free. It's a gift to all of us from God. And that gift, when we receive it, moves us towards God and our neighbor. That's it. That's grace. See, those two things are pretty simple when you hear it, right? When you hear it. So I want to talk just a little bit about the history of knitting, just a little bit, not much, because it's changed really dramatically, and most people might not have expected that. The actual act of knitting has stayed the same. It's the who. So it might surprise you to know that the stereotype, well, no, it won't surprise you that the stereotype is that women knit. That's the stereotype. And actually, it's kind of a truth statement. For every 100 women I know that knit, there's like 3 guys. So it's a fairly accurate thought today. But it wasn't always that way because as old as knitting is, and it's old, not as old as weaving. Weaving was before knitting. It was known to be done by men, right? It was known to be done by men. The earliest pieces of knitting that we have ever found are in connected to Cleopatra, and they found them connected to her royal garments. But during the Middle Ages, there were these things called knitters' guilds. And they were composed completely of men who brought the art of knitting to a very, very high degree of refinement. So if you were a young man who hoped to have a life outside of some drudgery work and you took to knitting, you would be sent away to serve as an apprentice for up to 3 years with a master knitter, not unlike, you know, people who make horseshoes, and it's the same sort of a system. And you would spend 3 years learning under the master knitter and then 3 years traveling to learn other styles of knitting and foreign techniques and patterns because the person you were going to knit for was royalty. And the royalty of the day would choose from among knitters. So you would hope to rise to the top and a prince or a princess or a king or a queen or an emperor would choose you and you would knit everything for them, from their socks to their undergarments to their beautiful decorative things. That was while others were doing those tapestry weavings on the wall. So the men of these guilds made the most exquisite garments. They were just stunning. And we have some of those, and we have pictures and drawings of some of them. In the Middle Ages also, there was a patron saint of knitters. It was this guy, Saint Sebastian, And he was the patron saint of knitters because he was martyred. He was killed by arrows, and so they made those arrows look like knitting needles. So the men in the Middle Ages, the guild, they would wear jewelry that had Saint Sebastian with his arrows. Well, beyond that, it always continued, and it was pretty functional after that. And then throughout history, women started to knit. And the biggest push, the biggest place beyond your own home was when war happened. So knitting came out of the closet, so to speak, and into the world when women knit for the war effort. Socks and bandages. I can't imagine anything more boring to knit than bandages. But you knit bandages, because we didn't always have ways to make things like we do today. And so I also want to tell this story. There was this woman from Philadelphia who was a spy knitter. I love her. During the War of Independence, she would hide messages to the other troops in her balls of yarn. And then she would, whoops, accidentally drop them. And a soldier, this is a true story, would come by and pick it up, grab the note of the enemy's whereabouts, stick it in his pocket, and move on. And no one ever caught her because she was a woman knitting by the side of the road. Who would have expected her to be a spy? So I thought that was very cool. But beyond that, we all know, because we're in our day and time, the two world wars caused lots and lots of knitting. And then September 11th. It died down after World War II, but then September 11th. Now, that wasn't knitting for a war effort. I talked to people about this last year. September 11th brought about the biggest resurgence of knitting since World War II. Why? Because we were scared. And we wanted to be not scared. So the knitting industry just expanded in huge leaps and bounds by people coming together in homes, sitting in circles, talking, telling stories, and knitting. It's been huge since September 11th, and it hasn't really died off. It's a different act now, because it's really all for decorative or functional purposes. We do send blankets overseas, and there's project that's called charity knitting, but it's different because we don't have to knit bandages anymore. There are helmet liners, I hate to say, for Afghanistan, but pretty much all that stuff is made now. So knitting now is a way to reach in love. We use that language. And so we knit blankets and sweaters for warming up America. There's a project called the Linus Project. Maybe you've heard of that. So the reason I'm telling you all of that is to say that as you knit, there are stereotypes that you're sort of living into, and people talk to you. Oh, you're a knitter. It happens. I can't tell you how often. And stereotypes for knitting are not unlike stereotypes for people of faith. So if you tell someone I'm a knitter, or you tell someone I'm looking for grace out in the world as I walk around, or you say that at your job place, people kind of go, huh. So let me talk about the stereotype for grace now. You heard all that stuff about knitting. Grace is much shorter. Mostly, the stereotype about grace is that you have to do something to deserve it. You have to do something to earn it. Good works get you grace and God's acceptance or love or pleasure, just pleasure. And actually, we've moved away from that stereotype, haven't we? And what we live into is that we understand God's grace coming to us often when we least expect it. Surprising even us. Sometimes lifting us up out of really, really low places. Sometimes saving us from grief and despair and hopelessness. sometimes just totally lighting up our life with joy. We're happy already, and it just makes it better. To have that kind of grace, we don't have to really do anything, except the trick is to notice it. So that's where, for me, the things come together. Knitting and faith call for noticing. It calls for noticing, and I'm going to call that trial and error a little bit. So Anne Lamott is one of my favorite writers, and she has a new book out. I know lots of you have read it. It's called Help, Thanks, Wow. And she claims, and I agree, those are our first three prayers. Help, thanks, and wow. When a prayer arises, especially at first, out of our hearts, it's usually something that's coming because we really need it. That's help me, help me, help me, help me, help me. Whatever the help me is about. And then somehow you perceive that maybe you got some help. And so what do you say? Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sometimes we even say, I swear I'll never do that again. Sometimes. That's Isla singing. And then we're walking along and something will happen out of that help me, thank you, where the next time something appears to us, we're able to go, oh, I'm going to avoid that. And we avoid it and maybe we think, wow. Wow, that was a close call. But thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. See? Help, thanks, wow. Well, I can always relate that to my knitting, because when I'm knitting along, it's trial and error just like that too. And if I suddenly make a mistake, and I find out I get to the end, and I'm supposed to have 22 stitches, and I have 24, which may not seem bad to you, but if you have 24 stitches over 30 inches and it keeps going, that's a lot of inches that you don't want. So I can just go help, and I can decrease right there while I'm going along. It's very forgiving. Or I can just tear it out. It's very forgiving. I can undo a few inches of my work. It's very forgiving. And then I look back and I'm amazed that it wasn't a huge hard thing, and usually I say, wow, I really do. And that's in part what you heard me read from the Psalms. It's ancient, but it's their help, thanks, wow, as well. It's an affirmation, what you heard, of God's life-giving power and life itself as a gift given freely to us from God. And in a real sense, the psalmist, the person writing that, they're asking for deliverance not so much from like physical sickness to physical health, but from a misunderstanding of how their life is and how they want it to be. I know it's hard sometimes in biblical old language to get that, but that's what they're asking for. And when they get it, that's towards the end, you hear them say, help, thanks. The wow part is, I'm clothed with joy. I'm giving thanks to God forever. My whole life becomes praise. So, from that passage, we kind of get that an awareness and a presence of some sort is the required thing to understand God's love and grace. It's the noticing. When we allow ourselves to notice the love of God in our life, then we're changed and transformed. And while the psalmist says they're thankful and they're dancing, for me, it looks different. A lot of times it looks like knitting. I like to dance too, but a lot of times it just looks like knitting. And maybe that sounds trite or simplistic. Actually, sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. Because to notice God and to understand deep down in our being how we are loved and how all that God wants for us is to love and be loved, it's hard work. And as with many activities and hobbies and practices, whatever one you do, you have to learn. And so with knitting, as you can imagine, there's a language all of its own. Maybe now, last week we talked about yoga, and that had a language all of its own too, right? And baseball's gonna have a language all of its own, and believe me, CrossFit has initials for everything and feminine names for everything. It's got a whole language. So you have these activities and they have a language all of their own. And that's the thing, so does grace. So part of the awareness of God's grace, not unlike knitting, is to just learn the dang language. So I just want to tell you a few things. Knit speak starts out in like fairly general terms. You know, yarn is what, soft or scratchy? Everybody thinks they're allergic to wool. Hardly anyone actually is. You just don't like the scratchy stuff. That's the truth. I don't really like knitting with it either, but we're in California, so I don't. You start out simple. But then you get a little more advanced and you know about things, and you need to know how much does your like yarn weigh. And this is bulky yarn. See how thick it is? And I have really thin yarn. See this? This is for lace. See how tiny that is? That's important because you want to know how to measure what you're going to wear. And then once you get past knowing how much something weighs or how much you need for a project, then you have to read a pattern. And there's all these terms and letters, knit one, purl one, cast on, cast off. Why does any of that matter? It matters because if you understand the language, you possess the knowledge that can take you deeper, right? And if you want to practice something, let alone master it, you have to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. Last week, we tried yoga in the pew. You start with breathing. Breathing. How do you learn to root your life in grace if you don't know what grace looks like? If you don't know how grace feels when it smacks you in the face? How do you know to root your life in grace if you don't even know when it's present? So see, the thing is, you knit with yarn, needles, and a working knowledge of stitches. Off you go knitting away. You root your life in grace all summer with an understanding, something like this. Let's try this. Grace is the moment that freaking Delta breeze came after what? 179 days of 130 plus degrees heat. Oh, my air conditioning broke. Broke. Do you hear me? So grace came when I called up my mom and said, "Hey, Mom, we're coming over." But that's grace. I had a place to go. There's cooling stations in this town. Not everyone has a place to go. That's recognizing grace and naming it as such. Grace is when you're doing fireworks with your family on 4th of July, and you're sitting there, and you suddenly realize, my husband Mark is sitting there, and I'm sitting next to him in low chairs. Harrison, the 19-year-old, is running the show. The 12-year-olds are helping him. We did not get up from our chairs. I think that's the first time that ever happened. I did not once scream out, "Watch out, you're going to burn yourself." And I turned and I went, "We've been sitting here for 30 minutes. That's the first time in 19 and a half years that has ever happened." The noticing of that moment and the sense of new life and a new way of being, it sounds simple maybe, but that's grace. It's just like that. We all want to grow. We all want to notice. And with time and practice, we get better and better at it. So, you might ask me, why knitting? You know, why not something else? Well, I didn't really ask to be a knitter. I didn't. Those of you who know me, I got stuck in a home ec class. I was supposed to take Latin. Never thought that I would love it. I started doing handwork, and I was just, that was it. I found out that I loved something that I didn't know that I loved. It wasn't always, though, at that point, a vehicle for me to notice grace. Now it is. And so I just want to try and describe for you how knitting helps me understand everyday grace clearly in my life. And part of why I wanted to share that with you is because I'm in conversations with a lot of you in private times, and we talk a lot about grace. And sometimes you'll say, how do you know that? And I want to tell you how my understanding about that has grown. And it's really, really simple on some level. But I wanted to knit this. This is called color affection. Things have names, just so you know. And I started to knit this June of 2012 with a friend. She started hers. She hasn't finished. Sorry, Susan. She'll listen to the podcast, and she knows I'm calling her out. Get on it. So we started it together. And this starts actually with three stitches. It becomes this, but you start with three stitches and you add on as you go. And three stitches, that's it. I ripped those three stitches out, I don't know, 20 plus times. Or we'd get a little ways and we'd count and it would be the wrong count. The thing is, this pattern had four rows to it. Four rows. Oh, I can't even do it. Four rows. And you would repeat those four rows 12 times. That, okay? 12 times. Four rows, 12 times. How hard is that? Really freaking hard, obviously. And I would have this, my pattern, and I would have this, and I would just stumble. Well, after about 10 repeats, at one point I realized I had stopped looking at my pattern. I have no idea when exactly that moment was, and I can't tell you when it was. And I sit there in frustration, and I think things like, holy moly, I have a master's degree. I can think of lyrics like other people think of Bible verses. I cannot memorize a knitting pattern. Why is this? The reason is because I expect too much too soon. I need to wait at least 46 to 50 rows. I need to get the pattern into me. And all that it takes is time and a willingness to do it over and over and over again. And before I know it, I've memorized it, I'm living it, I don't have to really refer very much except to know what row I'm on. And sometimes even that doesn't matter. It takes all of that to learn about grace. And what I mean to say is living into it over and over and over again until I just notice things without having to look up the Webster's Merriam definition of grace, right? The trouble comes then. I mean, I feel proud of that. I'm proud of this. I can't wait till it gets warm because it's wool, but it's this really soft kind. But here's the trouble. I really do like this. This is three different colors of yarn by one of my favorite yarn makers. I want to make another one. I really do. What if I spent my whole life just making this one thing over and over and over? I might be happy, and I could pick color combinations till the end of time. I have to push myself out of the comfort zone of doing this. I've learned it, right? It was really hard. I learned it. I could go back People would be so impressed if I had like 5 color affections. Believe me, you might not be, but knitters would be impressed. I would have one for every outfit, right? But no, I can't do that because I want to be a better knitter. So I have to push myself to go on to something else. So this is my something else now. And see, that one was all smooth. See, this one, it's got these dang posts in it. And do the posts go from bottom to top? Oh, no. They shift right in the middle. I can't tell you how many times I had to draw, pull that out. That's a lot to pull out. But I want to be better. I want to notice grace everywhere, not just in our little community, not just at my kids' school, not just with my closest and dearest friends. I want to be able to notice grace in the middle of nowhere with someone that I've never met before. You see, the simple act of making one stitch after another into a pattern, internalizing the pattern, it's what makes knitting easier over time. Same with grace. The simple rules of do good, do no harm, stay in love with God are a pattern, and internalizing that pattern and meeting with people week in and week out to practice that pattern makes practicing our faith easier over time. It lets us also know with a fair amount of certainty when we have messed things up. Same with knitting. That's back to Annie. Help me. Thank you. Wow. So, that's why I have a choice each time. And I ask myself, do I want to stay with the pattern that I've always known? Or do I want to pick something new? Do I want to knit the same thing over and over until I, like, master it and never make a mistake? In my kitchen table, do I want to stay with my sharing over and over at this level? Or do I want to go deep and really, really tell people what's going on inside my gut? In the practice of gathering and watching over each other in love, we can stay here or we can go deep. I push myself to notice and experience grace every day as best I can. I'm not a pro, but I'm better at it because of my knitting. I've been able to find grace in the most unexpected of places and situations, and giving me the practice of that is just yarn and sticks. And I really want to encourage all of you to do the same. I think people in this room have a practice that they do. I don't know what all your practice is. But I think you have something, and it could be yoga, it could be CrossFit, it could be crocheting, it could be scrapbooking, it could be cooking. The pattern is there. And by going deeper, you will learn more about your faith. I'm going to close with this quote from my favorite knitter. Her name's Stephanie Pearl McPhee. She encourages this about knitting, but I say it about noticing grace all summer, all lifelong. Don't throw in the towel because it's not working right now. Don't give up. There is always something happening that you really weren't expecting. The odds are extremely good that what you end up with won't be anything like what you thought you were trying to achieve. Sometimes, actually, it can be worse. Sometimes it can be better. But the longer you work at it, the better you will get either way. So, my words are this. Both knitting and faith are the triumph of hope over experience a lot of the time. And this is what I try to remember on the days when it seems as though random chaos rules my life. and rules the lives of those that I love around the world. We belong one to another, and we belong as well to the God that brings us from chaos to calm. The one who has the patience to see that there's a pattern to each one of us, so unique. And that one is never afraid to rip it out and start over with us. Never. We belong to a God of grace and a God who knits. I believe it.
Come and find the quiet center in the crowded life we lead. Find the room for hope to enter. Find the frame where we are freed. Clear the chaos and the clutter. Clear our eyes that we can see. And simple.